Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential. And here's your host, Jeff Crank.
Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of American Potential. This is the post-State of the Union session. We're doing this live just moments after the president wrapped up his State of the Union address to Congress. And the reason we have this yearly event is because in the Constitution, it states that the president of the United States must, from time to time, go to the Congress and give the State of the Union. So we are joined by several folks from Americans for Prosperity, and we're going to go to interviews, get their thoughts. We've had watch parties across the United States at AFP chapters throughout the U.S., and we've got several folks here to talk about that with us. First, we're going to go to Ashley Klingenschmidt, who is the Pennsylvania State Director of Americans for Prosperity. Ashley, thanks for joining us.
Jeff, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, first of all, you had a big watch party tonight, huh?
We did. There are still some people hanging around waiting for the Republican response to commence. But yes, it was an awesome crowd. I'm going to talk about some of the stories that folks shared with us here tonight. But we had almost 50% of the attendees at this event were brand new to AFP, which is so encouraging because it shows there is a real fire in the belly for change. And they wanted to kind of hear what we're doing, what we're all about. So we're very encouraged by that.
Well, that's great. Let me just give you a couple of initial thoughts that I had on the president's State of the Union. I've watched State of the Union addresses every year. I don't miss them. But I got to tell you, I thought this one was about the most divisive one I have seen. I thought the rhetoric was extremely divisive. And I got to tell you, I thought it was the politics of division tonight. I thought the president was trying to kind of score political points against. He kept kind of looking over at the Republicans in the House. I saw some other people, some Republicans kind of being maybe a little bit disrespectful. But for the most part, I thought that it was very divisive by the president. Did you see that as well?
Yeah, we agree. And, you know, ultimately, you just said the word rhetoric. And I think, you know, we heard things like price gouging, shrinkflation. But then there's the reality, which is a $5.5 trillion government takeover of this economy that has crushed middle and working class people, just like the folks sitting right behind me, that he, for that hour, claims to stand for and support. And so to everyone here, it was very transparent that it was mere rhetoric. And, you know, there's so many stories that we could share tonight, but a couple here that was a first-time AFP attendee, couple, Lindsay and David, both, one is from Fayette County, one is from Allegheny County. They are millennials. And, you know, they just shared how strained life has been. They don't see themselves buying a house anytime soon. Their wages have not kept up with inflation. And what we know is that since January of 2021, real weekly earnings have shrunk 4.4%. And American paychecks are lighter thanks to Bidenomics. And everyone here knew that. And so when he talked about, you know, the plethora of jobs or the state of the economy being strong, it just, you know, it really went over like a lead balloon in this crowd.
Yeah, I think, you know, I called it rhetoric. I think it was certainly rhetoric. But I also got this sense, and you alluded to it, that the president was blaming everybody but government for the problem. You know, there's shrinkflation, there's, you know, it's the evil corporations, it's everybody except the government that, in his mind, that caused inflation. We know inflation is caused by government. Did people there get that same sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, folks, there was a brand new lady that attended our event tonight. Her name was Kimberly. She's from Plum Borough in Allegheny County, county that Pittsburgh is housed within. And she uses heating oil. And, you know, we talked about the fact that, like, his energy policies, the president's, have hit hard. And since coming into office, she was able to cite that her home heating oil has gone up just shy of 50%. She had that statistic right on hand. And so, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that. I wrote some notes as the president was speaking. He talked about the climate crisis. He said lots of things about that, but he didn't mention that the policies that he's implementing on that are costing American families.
Right. Absolutely. You know, we also heard folks here just talking about credit card debt. That was a conversation that was going on before we even kicked off the evening, when we were just, you know, getting together, sharing names and a little bit about ourselves. And, you know, I looked this up in anticipation of our time together tonight. There was an ABC headline from February 6th that said Americans' credit card debt has hit a record $1.13 trillion. And that figure has increased by $50 billion this first quarter of 2023. And that, to me, is just like the best illustration of the fact that folks cannot get by. They're paying more, they're getting less, and they are having to figure out, you know, alternative ways to make ends meet. And that has resulted in this just overwhelming figure around credit card debt. And that was a subject that just came up organically as we were all meeting each other here tonight.
Yeah, the president, one other thing I'll mention to you, the president talked about debt, and I'm trying to find the comment here. The president said during his State of the Union address that the first couple of years as president, quote, we cut the deficit, the president said. He said, I've been delivering real results in fiscally responsible ways, unquote. We've already cut the federal deficit, he says. We've already cut the deficit over $1 trillion. That claim has been fact-checked numerous times by the Washington Post as untrue. I mean, it is not true. We have added, you know, $4 trillion, $5 trillion just this last, well, supposed to add another $5 trillion this year alone. We're at $34 trillion in debt. Do the folks in Pennsylvania see that? Do they recognize that the president's not, frankly, not being truthful on that?
They did, and moreover, they feel it. I mean, those billion and trillion dollar figures are overwhelming and tough to wrap your arms around. But, you know, we talked here tonight, prices are now about 18% higher. And just the average American household is paying about $11,500 more a year just to maintain the same quality of life as they did pre-Joe Biden. And so, like, whether or not they believe it, they feel it. They know it. Go to the grocery store. We talked about that. And I'll tell you, we have done a number of events across the Commonwealth connecting people with some of these realities. And, you know, the president is coming back to Pennsylvania tomorrow. He's been here, I think, over 24 times in this term. And he's coming back tomorrow morning. And so we're doing an event in Philadelphia. And we're going to have the first 50 people to come have breakfast with us. We're going to give them a little bit of a relief, pay for their breakfast, and just continue to connect them with why we're seeing such incredibly high prices. And it has nothing to do with some of the things that the president commenced the State of the Union with.
Yeah. He really took no blame for his policies that have caused inflation. He tried to blame, again, corporations and, you know, everybody else, Republicans in the thing. I mean, do you see it as I did, that this was just kind of a campaign speech almost?
It's where Wesley.
Oh, absolutely. And I will tell you, the moment this crowd was loudest is when he started to talk about immigration.
Yeah.
And I think it is critical to note that under this administration, the borders, I mean, we know they're chaos, but what does that mean? Nearly 7 million undocumented migrants have crossed the southern border. And what did it all begin with? His announcement that he was going to have a 100-day moratorium on deportations. He sent that signal day one. And so everything he said tonight on immigration got a huge response from this crowd. And again, like, they know the facts. We all remember him, you know, beginning this term with the moratorium on deportations, and that matters. That sent a signal to a lot of bad actors that profit off exploiting people, that this was going to be, you know, a moment in time and an inflection point where they could do just that.
Yeah. Well, Ashley, any final thoughts before we let you go? We're going to go to Megan Novak here in a minute, but anything that you'd like to add?
Well, I thought it was fascinating that our very own Senator Casey got a shout out and the cameras panned to him and he got the opportunity to stand. And I'll tell you, like, at that moment, we all connected the fact that this is a Biden-Casey economy. Senator Casey has been a rubber stamp for everything this president has done. So that, I would say, was probably the second most poignant moment here in this room at Pugliano's from this crowd, was just, you know, the fact that Senator Casey is, you know, just as much to blame as President Biden for what we're seeing.
Sure. All right, Ashley, thank you so much for joining us, spending a few moments with us afterwards. Go back and enjoy the folks there that came to visit with us and watch the State of the Union.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
All right, you bet. Well, thank you. Look, it's amazing. We are going to talk a lot about the immigration issue, and I do think that was the most telling. Here in just a minute, we're going to go to Megan Novak, the state director in Wisconsin. But I want to point out, you know, the president, again, talks about things, but then I think the reality is different. And the American people understand that the reality is different. You know, I will tell you, I saw some people, some Republicans, wearing hats in the House chamber. Last I knew, you couldn't wear hats. So, you know, from a decorum standpoint, I got to tell you, I think America is slipping. We ought to learn to be nice to one another a little bit more often. But I must tell you, I thought that the word I wrote down on my notes when I was listening to the president was taunting. I felt like he was taunting Republicans. This was not a State of the Union speech. It seemed more to me like a campaign speech. Let's go to Megan Novak. Megan is the state director for Americans for Prosperity in Wisconsin. Megan, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Jeff. I'm coming from you live from the crucial Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Great. Yeah, that's right. Waukesha, Wisconsin, one of my favorite cities, just because I like to say Waukesha. So listen, thanks for being with us. What were your impressions of the president's address tonight?
You know, I wrote down the word patronizing because that's what it was to me. Every one of those lines and just the political theater of it did not sit well with me. It didn't sit well with anyone here in our Waukesha watch party or in the three other watch parties we held across Wisconsin. People saw right through, frankly, the garbage that he was spewing and the lies. And without even myself or someone else from AFP who does this for a living, just everyday Wisconsin citizens coming out and saying, that's not true. That's not what I'm feeling at the grocery store. That's not what I'm feeling trying to take my family out to eat. And it just, the political theater of it, the campaign speech, like you said, just, it left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth tonight.
Yeah. I think back to many State of the Union addresses that I've watched. I think of the sort of, you know, soaring oratory prowess of a Ronald Reagan giving such a great speech there. Or even a Bill Clinton, who I didn't agree with on many of the policies, but at least he knew how to give a speech. To me, the president tonight, quite frankly, I'm just going to be honest, seemed like he was very angry, just angry, kind of almost yelling the whole time. Your thoughts on that, on the presentation of the speech?
I don't know how you can go and say the state of our country is strong or good and then sit and yell at the American people and yell at Congress, your administration, the Supreme Court, for goodness sake, for over an hour. Doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. He took the first, I think it was the first 20 minutes, because I started timing him when he stopped doing it. But the first 20 minutes seemed like a campaign-y event, as I said, not a State of the Union. He bashed former President Trump on his stance on NATO, made some comments about January 6th, IVF treatments, Roe versus Wade, all these topics that I think truly divide America. And there was not, you know what really was missing from this, and we've seen it so many times in the past in State of the Union addresses, there's uplifting messages that both sides of the aisle stand up and applaud. There just wasn't much of that in this speech, was there?
No, it was so divisive. And you're right, the way he came out swinging, frankly, and really just took it to Republicans in Congress, the former president, and supporters of both at home watching, and didn't have any unity when he is the president who ran on uniting our country. And all we got out of this speech tonight was more division. And it just, I mean, when you have them chanting four more years as the president is walking into what is supposed to be a very formal speech talking about the state of our country, what's going well, what's wrong, and they turned it into a political campaign rally. Like I said, it just was so off-putting this entire time.
Yeah, and look, I'll criticize both sides on that, though I think the Democrat side was much more telling in this. You know, I think presidents should come to the House chamber. They should give the State of the Union address, and there should be decorum because it's a great institution. We should protect and respect the institution of the Congress and the House, but also the President of the United States, no matter who that person is. But I just thought, you know, whether it was wearing hats or kind of lecturing the president on his way in, or the president lecturing the Supreme Court, for goodness sakes, on items, or constantly, as I use the word, taunting the Republicans in the chamber. It was off-putting to me. The whole thing was pretty off-putting.
Completely agree, and everyone here thought the same thing. They were ready for it to be over, frankly, after the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about immigration. I imagine that is the section of the president's speech tonight that got the most groans from your audience. Am I right on that? I mean, were they probably groaning at the immigration stuff?
Absolutely. People know, they see it in the news, they hear the stories that what is happening at our border is an absolute crisis and we can't let it continue. And to hear President Biden go up there and just try and pretend like everything's fairly okay, it just flies in the face of what people know to be true. And again, goes to that, how disingenuous he is as a leader of our country.
Well, I think the president, I think the American people reacted to that. And I'm sure if we could go into almost any living room in America, they don't buy it. They don't buy that the president is doing his job on the border and on immigration. I think they know he has the legal tools he needs to enforce the law. In fact, the former President Trump did a much better job at enforcing the law on immigration. We had far fewer issues there, but there was no change in law between President Trump and President Biden on the border. They can't seem to get anything passed on the border. So what is the difference between this administration and the previous one on border security? Well, it's the lack of political will to secure the border. I mean, don't the American people understand that?
They absolutely do. And they see a president who's, you know, talking on one side of his mouth, but his actions aren't matching it. You know, he's up there tonight saying that we need to do something on the border, when in reality, they know that his message is that we have open borders, and that should not be the case in this country. Open borders are dangerous for our economy, for the future of our country, and we have to close them down and secure our borders so that we can get back on the right track here.
Well, and I think people see the connection, to lawlessness and the rule of law. The rule of law is so important to be able to have a rule of law. And again, if people don't like a law, they can change it, but you can't just ignore a law for time immemorial and expect there to be a rule of law. But I think people also see the connection to crime, whether it's the drug crisis, the fentanyl, the issues that are happening at the border. The American people see that, and they're very frustrated by this administration. But in kind of a bold move, the president seemed to just blame the Republicans for that, or blame the House of Representatives, as if he isn't the person who is in control of enforcing the laws. That's what the Constitution provides, and that's what his oath demands of him. Your thoughts on that?
It would be really nice if we had, investigative journalists or legitimate fact checkers who would call him out on this lie in his speech, as well as all the other lies that he told. But unfortunately, I just don't see that that's going to happen. But luckily for AFP, voters and Wisconsinites especially, they don't buy the lies anymore. They see right through him, even if he's not getting fact checked by the media as he should be.
Yeah. Well, Megan, any final thoughts on the speech, or maybe some stories of some folks who came tonight that you'd like to tell us?
Yeah, there's two stories I want to share.
Okay.
The first is not from tonight, but from an event we held over the weekend. We were lucky enough to hold an event at a skating rink, which do still exist, a nice roller skating rink, because in this economy, when people can barely afford groceries, they're certainly not affording family fun. And Sue, the owner of the skating rink, was so thankful to have us host this event and provide just an afternoon of family fun for people. She said that business had not been that good for them since President Biden took office, because families are just putting fun like that to the side. So it was such a cool opportunity to help out a small business in Wisconsin and just to let families relax a little bit and go roller skating for an afternoon and hopefully forget just how bad inflation is and how bad it's hitting their pocketbooks. And then this evening, I was, like I said, I'm in crucial Waukesha here in Wisconsin, and we had so many young voters join us tonight for the first time, their first time ever coming to an AFP event. And I think, unfortunately for young voters, they get a really bad rap of, they want the giveaways, they want the big government, they want the free housing, the student loan forgiveness, the free healthcare, et cetera. But not these young voters who came to our event. They saw right through that. They immediately talked about how dangerous that would be to their ability to live out the American dream, to their future, to be able to, have the career, have the family, and do all of the wonderful things that the previous generations have done. And that just really lifted my spirits to know that we've got young people who are thinking critically, who are engaged at such a young age and ready to take action with us to make a difference, and frankly, hold Senator Tammy Baldwin accountable for going into lockstep with President Biden on all these horrible policies that are hurting Wisconsinites.
Yeah, well, those are great. And it is great to see, younger generation folks turning out, particularly to events like this. And pay attention. It's easy for people to not watch the State of the Union address. I'm glad that we do. I watch them. It doesn't matter who the president of the United States is. I think anybody who loves America should watch it, even if sometimes they have to suffer through it. There were moments I did have to suffer through it tonight, I must admit. But Megan, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. From Waukesha, Wisconsin, we appreciate you.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, great. Yeah, look, I think the president, I talked about how divisive it was. He blamed, one of the things that I think was so amazing, he talked about inflation dropped from 9% to 3%. He's just, some of these numbers just kind of making up and forgetting that there's also 3 years prior to that where the rampant spending from COVID, the COVID spending that has been foisted upon America caused this inflation. And so for people to not understand that, for the president to try and act as though that, was somehow not caused by government is really quite remarkable. He didn't really mention, I don't remember him mentioning, $34 trillion in debt. That's our debt. He talked about education. I remember in talking to the president or listening to the president talk about it, he talked about education. He had nothing in there about competition. He had everything he was talking about with regard to education was about spending. Got to spend more on K through 12 education. Spend more, spend. That was his response. And again, we have a budget deficit every year. We have $34 trillion in debt, and we're going to add another $5 trillion this year. Let's go to Jesse Ramos. Jesse is the State Director of Americans for Prosperity in the state of Montana. Jesse, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Jeff, and congratulations on the success of this podcast. I just think it's amazing that there's a podcast out here like this that talks about bottom-up solutions and that your message has really resonated with millions of Americans.
Well, thanks, Jesse. It's great. And, you know, this is kind of our first experiment. We did one live podcast a few days ago. This is our first sort of live effort right after an event like the President's State of the Union address. So glad to have you on. What part of Montana are you in right now?
I'm in Missoula, Montana, so kind of the southwest.
Gotcha. Well, listen, your initial thoughts of the president's speech tonight.
Well, it's interesting. Just when I was watching it, I had the same initial reactions as you did, Jeff. It was divisive. It was very political in nature. It sounded like a giant campaign speech. And the president seemed very, very angry. And I mean, for a guy that came into office as being the uniter, he had an approval rating of almost 60% because Americans wanted to come together. For him to give that speech, I think just shows that, unfortunately, a lot of that was just campaign talk in 2020. And I think that we're going to expect more of the same if he gets reelected in 2024.
Yeah. Well, I think about this. I just thought about this. I talked about it being divisive, but he went right in. I mean, in the first couple of minutes, talked about, went after Trump, talked about January 6th, talked about Roe versus Wade, went right into abortion. And I thought to myself, could you imagine if Donald Trump or any previous Republican president started off a State of the Union address and went right to the abortion issue? Like, the media would be up in arms about a Republican president doing that. I don't know, we're on air right now, so I don't know what the media's reaction is. But imagine they aren't thinking that that's divisive, even though that issue is certainly a divisive issue that divides Americans. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. It's divisive. And I mean, you're 100% right that the double standard is very, very real. I mean, at the end of the day, if a Republican president had said anything close to that, you'd be having calls for the Hatch Act, for impeachment, for campaigning on taxpayer dollars, any number of things. But I think you're going to hear largely from the media that this was a victorious speech, that this was a great speech, that Joe Biden proved everybody wrong. At the end of the day, I think he proved folks like myself correct, where I am concerned that he's a very divisive president. He thinks government is the solution to all of our problems, and he really thinks that we should just double down on more of the same failed bad policies that are killing the American dream for millions and millions of Americans.
Yeah, you talked about government being the answer to everything for this president. The spending was unbelievable. He talked about on education, he talked about he wanted to give public school teachers a raise. That may be a very noble goal, but it isn't something that the president of the United States should concern himself with, is whether or not someone in Missoula, Montana, a public school teacher there, gets a raise or not. That should be the school board in Missoula, Montana deciding that, right?
Oh, absolutely. It should be. And Jeff, it was so interesting to me that issue after issue we talked about, from public education not being good, to the cost of housing, to the cost of energy, to inflation, any number of these problems, they're all problems that were started by folks like him in government. And now he's trying to come around. It's kind of like somebody that starts a fire, the government starts a fire, and then they try and sell you the hose to put it out. He talked about the symptoms of the disease, but he didn't address the disease itself, which is government. All of these issues were created by government, and he wants to double down and make them worse and worse and worse. It sounds great to be able to tell people, I'm going to cure cancer, I'm going to give teachers a raise, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Well, we've had 3.5 years of him saying that he's going to do these things and trying to do these things, and we've seen every one of those issues get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we hear all these great promises, but what we really end up with is $34 trillion of debt and growing. He talked about inflation. He talked about it dropping, he says, from 9% to 3%. He didn't talk about what the cause of inflation is. The cause, of course, of inflation is too much government spending, which happened, you know, certainly some of it was Donald Trump's fault, right, from some of the spending pre-COVID. But it's on steroids now because of COVID. You know, and this president has really accelerated the debt that the American people will someday have to pay.
Oh, he absolutely has. And we used to learn in school, I don't know about anymore, but when I was younger, that inflation was always a monetary problem. It was too many dollars chasing too few goods. And we heard time after time this president try and tie it into corporate greed, into shrinkflation, into any number of things. I just find it interesting that all of a sudden he's kind of playing the victim card, that these corporations just waited until Joe Biden was president, and then all of a sudden they decided to raise all these prices just to make him look bad, instead of the more obvious answer to that, which is the fact that we have unprecedented levels of spending, unprecedented levels of regulation that caused this, that have been enabled by folks like John Tester in the Senate, like Tammy Baldwin, any number of folks that have ushered in these trillions of dollars of wasteful spending that have unleashed inflation. And Joe Biden, unfortunately, thinks the American people are going to believe that he's the victim in all of this.
Yeah. To me, that was one of the worst things that I thought the president did in the speech, quite honestly, was this ridiculous shrinkflation argument. I mean, he kept blaming business and, you know, the evil corporations in his mind, you know, things like that. And, you know, as if that's the cause. It never occurred to him why, even if there is quote unquote shrinkflation, wouldn't it be caused by government causing products to cost more, you know, the rising cost of getting something to market. You know, maybe they can't put stuff in. I mean, it's not like the free market system isn't going to try and give you the best value on the best product that they possibly can and still make a little bit of profit. It's just that government now with their inflation is not making it possible for companies to have that same profit. So they have to make some kind of change.
Yep, absolutely. It's all cause and effect. And I also thought it was very interesting, Jeff, that the president seemed to be talking out of both sides of his mouth. So for a lot of the speech, if you just listened to the speech and you didn't live in America and you weren't going to work every day and trying to put food on the table and seeing your gas prices go up and your grocery prices go up, if you just listened to the rhetoric for a large part of that speech, you'd think we were living in the roaring 20s. You'd think this was the early 2000s in the tech boom. You'd think this was Reagan era policies where everybody was thriving, where you could afford to have a family with a stay-at-home mom and three kids on a single-income household and a thriving middle class. You would think that was the case. And then, unfortunately, on the ground here, we're seeing it, obviously, personally, that's not the case. And then when we go talk to voters and folks at the doors, at events, any number of things, and you hear single moms break down in tears to our activists saying that they can't afford to live in the home that they've lived in anymore. They're having to put groceries back on the shelves at the grocery store. They're having to really cut down on how much they drive. They can't take their kids to soccer practice anymore. So it's just two contrasting visions, that on one hand, you've got the president saying that these are just thriving roaring 20s. And then on the other hand, you've got the people that are hurting, they're struggling. They feel like the American dream is dying and is dead for them. And I just found that so deceitful for the president to on the one hand, paint everything good. And then on the other hand, anything that might have been bad, it wasn't his fault. It was all the big corporations. It had nothing to do with him and his policies.
Yeah. It was unfortunate. I will say this, and these are not well. He talked about passing the PRO Act. He was throwing bones to labor unions, not to workers, but to labor union bosses. I thought about passing, wanted the PRO Act passed. He didn't mention that it would force millions of Americans, if the PRO Act were to pass, would force millions of Americans to not work in the way they want to work. It would force them to not be contractors. Many people choose to do that. This is a boon to union bosses. He didn't mention that. He talked about raising the minimum wage. He didn't mention what that does to cause inflation and hurt working families as well. As you said, he blamed corporations, blamed really the American people and the capitalist system rather than government on much of these. One last thing. I also thought that he had And again, I have to call this out because I got to tell you, if it was a Republican, everybody else would be calling the president out, and I'd call them out too if they were using this kind of rhetoric. But I thought it was very divisive, sort of racial rhetoric too, to kind of divide people. He said, and I wrote the quote down, he wanted to give hate no safe harbor, was his quote. And of course I agree with that. What American wouldn't agree with that? But you can't give hate no safe harbor and then demonize people who disagree with you. And I thought the president spent most of his campaign, you know, lecturing, pointing at Republicans there, talking about others who disagreed with him on issues. You can't simultaneously do that and then say you want to give hate no safe harbor. It just seemed very divisive to me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. As a Hispanic American, what I care most about is unleashing opportunity for everybody of every nation, nationality, race, creed, sexual orientation. I think that everybody is better off, our society is better off, our country is better off, our world is better off when government barriers get out of the way and let all groups of people survive and thrive. Unfortunately, talking about different racial groups, those people have been some of the biggest victims of them all when it comes to government overreach, government regulations, any number of things. So if Joe Biden actually cared about those folks, he'd want to unleash the American dream, reignite the American dream by getting out of the way, by letting those people use their unique talents and gifts to help other people, to create businesses, to create jobs, to create revenue, to support themselves and their families. But unfortunately, like you said, he's not doing that. He's going to cheat political talking points. He's trying to divide Americans in hopes that he can win back some support ahead of his election.
You know, one quote, too, that I wrote down, and I go back to it. I mean, I just can't imagine a Ronald Reagan or a Jimmy Carter or an FDR, or a Gerald Ford saying this. But at one point during the immigration comments that he was trying to tell people that his policies weren't what's causing the mass hysteria and confusion and problem at the border, he said, looked at the Republicans and he said, quote, "I know you know how to read," talking about a bill. I mean, he's talking to members of Congress, like talking down to them. "I know you know how to read." It just, I don't know. I would call a Republican out if they did that. I don't like that kind of I don't know. We're Americans. We should not have State of the Unions where we're dividing people and you know, we're talking about that. I mean, it's okay to bring up problems and policy differences. That's the greatness of America. But when you are taunting, I mean, I don't know any other better way or word to use than taunt. But when you're taunting your political opponents, sort of in a campaign speech, that's not a State of the Union address, Jesse.
No, it absolutely is not. And the American people are sick and tired of this divisive rhetoric, whether it's on the Democrat side, whether it's on the Republican side. They want lawmakers to come together and find solutions that actually solve problems. They're sick and tired of the charades, of the acting, of President Biden trying to get social media hits by saying some of that to folks. They want people to respect each other. They want us to have a government that we can be proud of. And they want solutions that actually help them and their families and don't just help the politicians win re-election.
Yeah. All right, Jesse. Well, listen, hey, thanks for staying a little extra time tonight and joining us on this. I hope that you found it informative and, you know, it was a little bit of a respite, I guess, after the State of the Union address. So appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Chef.
All right, great. Well, you know, again, I wish it weren't so. I wish we could look at this and say, wow, what a statesman. That was a statesmanly State of the Union address. That's what we used to say. It wasn't that long ago in American history where we could say that. And State of the Union addresses were not used simply as campaign speech. I mean, that's essentially what this was. This was simply a broadside. There was no reaching across the aisle in this speech. I just didn't see it. And again, I think the mainstream media, if this speech were given by a Republican, the mainstream media would probably be calling them out on this. So it's only fair to do it here. And I would be, too. I think that the American people are looking for someone to not be that divisive, to do things and fix problems in Washington, D.C. And that's not what happened in this speech. This was a finger pointer, if you will. Well, listen, hey, thanks for joining us on this live episode of American Potential. We appreciate you being with us and hope that you will join us. Again, you can go to our website, AmericanPotential.com, and you can learn more about us. You can go to our YouTube channel, American Potential. You can also find us on any podcast platform out there, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can send me an email. Love to hear from you via email. Jeff@AmericanPotential.com is our email address. Listen, liberty and freedom, they're precious. Make sure you go out and defend liberty and freedom. Fight for it each and every day. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.